Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the sixth and final season of Supergirl. Now, we may also talk about some of the other Arrowverse shows if they come up and such, and I think one or two might. This was kind of an interesting season in so much as it was picking up dangling plot lines from the last season because of the whole pandemic, abrupt end of season five. They aired, what, six or so episodes, then had a little bit of a hiatus, and then all the rest came out. And it was not a bad season, but I don't think it was their best season.
They do a lot of social commentary, but at times, for me, they fall into the somewhere between too obvious and too preachy.
Well, I guess what I came out of the season feeling was some of the episodes and some of the writing overall was heavy-handed.
Yeah, and that's a good word for it.
And there were other parts where it was almost melodramatic.
Mm.
And the episode when Kelly kind of became Guardian, it was focused on her, I thought was a really good episode. And I want to start with that because I'm going to, you know, have some critical aspects to my comments on it. But I liked it overall. She wrote it, the actress who plays Kelly, so props to her. But it felt very heavy-handed on some of the social commentary there. It felt a little, again, overly melodramatic in some places.
For me, there were aspects of it that was everything George Floyd and all of those protests got thrown into that one episode along with everything COVID.
Well, and there were aspects where it was not unique to that one episode, so I don't want it to come across as it was her writing or anything.
No, but I'm just saying they tried to put so much into the one episode.
Yes,
that
yes.
I think that's where some of the heavy-handed came from. If they had been trying to do the sense of isolation, for instance, which it was a very COVID plot line and a very COVID experience, if they had spread that out over three or four episodes, instead of really throwing at us hard in that one episode.
Yeah, I think if they had been able to get each episode of the season kind of written, but then able to do a rewrite on the surrounding ones to kind of build up into and lead out of,
yeah,
it would have worked better. And that was a good example of that, where I felt they could have set some things up a little bit to where it didn't feel almost so abrupt in that episode. And I don't want to say dropped off afterwards.
Well, they felt that they were doing the subplot of her taking on doing the social worker for the foster kids stuff to lead into that, was my take on
it. Yeah, and I don't want to harp on the one episode. I think she did a good job writing it and such.
No, but my point was that to me didn't feel like foundation for that episode, but to the writers, I think it did on the other episodes.
And I would agree with that. I just think that's one example of a few others where there were some things that I guess they thought they were setting up, but it felt like other times, like the guy whose ship they wind up in.
Mitch.
We get him set up with the flashback episode, the time travel one, which I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt like, okay, he's just a one-off character for there. And then he's, like, in the back half of the season as a major character.
Yeah.
And they may have seen that as setting him up. To me, it was just, we've got the actor, let's keep using him, or something like that. And the actor did a fine job, I just didn't think it was a great role.
I would agree with the not a great role. I think there were things they could have done to make the character either more interesting or make more sense to be in that position.
Yeah. Well, and to better explain where he had been and what he had been doing from when they flash back to Kara and Alex, you know, high school prom, I guess it was.
Yeah.
To, you know, now current day.
Mm-hmm.
And they got the same actresses they'd had for the younger versions of the characters before, and they did a great job there. They also got, as the friend of Kara, the actor Peter Sedarso, who was a Power Ranger for a season and such. And he did a fine job there. It was just one of those roles that we've been following Kara now for 5+ years, and he was never mentioned again. So,
yeah,
love interest, not going to work out.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of things that I feel they throw in as a minor subplot for a few episodes. And to me, it comes across as more of a throwaway or an incidental where they think they're planting seeds. Like the older brother of one of the foster kids.
Yeah, he's there for an arc, and then they do a callback to him at the end. We watched enough of... It's funny, because we watched some of these as they were coming out, and then others we let stockpile and caught up and such. And he was there for an arc or two, and then he's gone for a while. So if we were watching this, you know, week to week as it was coming out, it would have very much felt like we haven't seen him in months. And then boom, he's there as if we remember him.
Well, and he's a character where I kind of don't envy the writers for the corner they put themselves into. Because when the building was, I think it was when the building was coming down.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty sure that's when it was. And we're trying to rescue people from the building. And it's when we're testifying about stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And we're in the building and it's shaking apart and stuff. And he's there along with Kelly. And we're trying to rescue people and guide them to safety. And because Kelly is on her path to becoming Guardian, they have this great women's empowerment moment for her where it's, oh, wait, I don't need superpowers. I can use my brain. I can take the bulletin board off the wall. Mm-hmm. I can use it to catch the glass. I can do these things. Except he was also right there in that situation. And it would have been equally powerful a moment, perhaps more so, if the ex-con had been the one to think fast on his feet, grab something, and use it to protect the person who had just been saying, basically, you are a waste of our effort to give low-income housing to.
You're almost irredeemable. We've cast you aside, yet you just saved me, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because we've referred to him as kind of the brother. It's because he's the older brother of a foster kid that Kelly was looking in on. Yet when we see this brother at the end, the younger brother is nowhere to be found.
Very good point. Yeah.
And there's aspects of the writing there where it's not that it falls apart. It's that it doesn't hold together as tightly as it could and it should. And they had a number of arcs, character arcs through the season. Dreamer really coming into her own with her powers, dealing with her sister, the loss of her mother, all that kind of stuff. We get a really interesting but odd arc with Lena finding out that her parentage, her biological mother, was a witch. She's got magical powers that she's, pardon the term, magically embracing over the course of this.
I can't help but feel if Nixie and the fifth dimensional imps and everything had not been part of the season, they'd have done something else with Lena and left magic out of Lena.
Yes, I think so.
I mean, Lena having this, I've always been so science-brained that considering magic is the opposite of how I think. And I mean, there were times when it was almost but not quite a do you believe in religion or do you believe in science?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, I mean, it was an interesting journey.
Well, it was an interesting idea for a journey. I don't think the journey that she went on was all that interesting because she went from I can't accept this, I'm a person of science, to suddenly diving into the spellbook wholeheartedly.
For me, the interesting journey was her realizing that you're never going to succeed if you doubt yourself.
Yeah.
If you believe it isn't going to work, if you believe you can't do it, if you find fault with every step before you try it, you're never going to succeed.
And that's an interesting journey, and they did well with that, but isn't that an odd journey to put that character on?
Definitely.
Who had been so self-assured for how many seasons now?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, later when she's, you know, just kind of awed that hubris takes down a different character. And it's kind of a, you know, You grew up around hubris. I would think you understood it better than that.
Yeah. And it's funny because in this season, she was effectively pretty much fully redeemed early on from past misdeeds.
Mm-hmm.
That included, shooting her brother in cold blood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, plus other various...
Nana Cherry.
Yeah, the whole let's take over the world sort of a thing. There's no repercussions for her. There was no even a pardon for her. It's just, yeah, we're over it.
She never had purposeful, malicious intent, was where they seemed to draw their line. And, I mean, from the moment Lena came into the show, we were left to speculate, is she going to be a big bad? Is she on the verge of becoming a big bad? Is she simply misunderstood because she carries the Luther name?
Well, and I think they hit all of those a number of times over the course of the seasons.
Yeah.
Because she's been in since the beginning of second season.
Yeah.
And I think she's been an interesting character. I think the actress did a great job with her.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that the shift they made this season was a little inexplicable. And it was not just the... Because she never really forsook the science, but she really dove into the magic surprisingly quickly. And her clothing style, hairstyle, really subtly changed over the course of the back half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's not in the power suits with the pullback hair or whatever. Suddenly her hair is longer. It's flowing. It's more, quote unquote, magical.
Yeah. Bohemian.
Almost. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good word for it, too. And then it's just all of the characters, I think, had those kinds of... We've got to go somewhere with them.
Well, the beginning of the season was the Phantom Zone.
Well, again, the beginning of the season was wrapping up loose ends on last season's arc. And that kicked into the Phantom Zone stuff very quickly.
Yeah. So, but for me, it was kind of a... We threw our characters into very different environments. And it's kind of a, you know, are we going to deal with Kara, who's kind of off on her own?
Yeah, she was trapped in the Phantom Zone for most of the opening six episodes.
With her father.
With her father, who then comes back, is in a few episodes, and then never to be heard from again. I mean, they gracefully kick him off screen, but...
Well, he sticks around long enough to try and repeat the mistakes he made on Krypton.
On Krypton. It's funny because... As annoying as it was in Superman and Lois for them not to address Supergirl as a series, it was probably a little more frustrating for me for Supergirl not to acknowledge Superman and Lois, the series. Because in the first two seasons in particular, Clark was always texting her. Yeah. He was a character without being there.
Yeah.
And they never once did that. And there were a couple of times, I mean, the closest we got to that was a reference of the Smallville Gazette now being one of the top 10 media things out there, because, you know, Lois is working for them and such. But I don't know that they actually flat out said Lois was working for them. We just know because we watched the other show.
Yeah. Well, and the second half of the season, we were more focused really on Kako turning to clickbait, which was a gradual evolution with the change of ownership and stuff. And, I mean, one of the things that they did... I think William Day was sadly wasted as a character.
It took a while for me to really start to like him, and I think once they embedded him with the heroes, and really in the last few episodes, they really kind of, I don't say redeemed the character, but made him one that I liked more.
I was finally enjoying watching him, and then they, to my thinking, threw him away in multiple senses.
It was, but the minute he had that confrontation with... You used my byline to tell this story.
Yeah.
You've tarnished my reputation and stuff. And I'm like, that's not going to end well.
Yeah.
And it didn't. It didn't end quite the way I thought it would, because his final call was both a little self-serving, a little...
Impossible?
It's TV. I'll grant them he survives getting shot twice in the heart for a few minutes. It's like, okay, fine.
Well, but the video is still recording. and manages...
Oh, that part of impossible from a technical side, not the...
Yeah.
He has two bullets that should have, you know, instantly killed him, and he's hanging on for 5 minutes. Okay, I get it.
Yeah,
okay.
No, I mean, he's got a video recording, and he tells the video that's recording where he wants it to email itself, and with what subject line.
Yeah, but instead of making a phone call that could have saved his life, he then sends it to, you know, the person who swiped his, borrowed his byline at Catco and stuff. It's kind of a, I told you so without saying I told you so.
Well, and he never once says, Supergirl!
Yes.
Even Esme knows to do that when things are bad.
Yeah.
And Esme's like 6 years old.
Well, and she came out of nowhere over the last, what, six episodes or something?
Well, she was in the foster home with the younger brother of the brothers we were talking about.
Oh, she was the one from earlier, I guess. Yeah.
She was in the foster home, and she was the one who had seen Kelly get the footage from the security
cameras.
That's
right. I'd forgotten. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, they do try to set some stuff up. It's just done in a way that... It's not that it feels clumsy. It's that it's sometimes ineffective and not working, I think, the way they think it works, at least for me. And again, it's not like it's a bad show, but there are times where... The writing is almost so over the top on social commentary. I mean, the whole clickbait thing is misinformation. Can you trust the news? That sort of a thing. And then it's overly emotional at times.
Well, but this is also the prime opportunity to run down the list of characters that you're trying to keep track of and keep in your head. Because you've got Supergirl, her sister Alex, Kelly, Dreamer, Brainy.
Mm-hmm. Martian Manhunter.
Yeah. And then we have William Day.
William Day. Lena.
Lena.
The one who's acting as head of CatCo.
Oh, Andrea Rojas.
Andrea Rojas.
Okay, so that's nine.
Plus Nixley, the villain. Mitch, the sidekick to her. Lex, for part of it. Who else? We've had two or three others.
That was a dozen. And then we got to the two brothers that recurred. Then we got Esme, who was in eight episodes. Mm-hmm. So right there, you're at 15, and they're keeping everybody in play just enough. Well, like that secretary.
Yeah, I was going to mention her, who came, it felt like, out of nowhere when the dome went over the city.
Yes, but I think she was the same one that was at The Hague when the Courage Totem was used, and she was the same one who appeared when they were zapping the sun.
Yes, the sun was a definite callback. I forget the timing of The Hague versus the dome, but well, the other character that we had for a few episodes that I expected to come back was Mixelpick.
Yeah.
They had an excellent opportunity to bring him back for the finale, and I was disappointed they didn't. I think Thomas Lennon did a great job with the role.
He did.
I mean, he was referenced in that episode. And I'll give them props for the finale. They brought back a number of longtime characters we hadn't seen for a bit. We get Jimmy Olsen. We get Mon-El. We get Wynn.
Mm-hmm.
So Mon-El and Wynn had to come back from the future and such, so that was kind of nice. There were a few others they probably could have brought back, Saturn Girl or whatever, if they'd wanted to, but didn't see the need to. Those two, though, were, you know, Mon-El was in, what, two seasons?
That sounds right.
And then Wynn was one of the original characters.
Mm-hmm.
They even got Calista Flockhart to reprise the role as Cat Grant.
I gotta say, I loved those scenes. As much as those were one step above She Phoned It In.
It was, I think, more than a step. It was very much a remote shoot at a beach somewhere.
Yeah.
And
but, I mean, it was literally just her.
Yes.
It was not... It did not come across as she flew to where they were filming, but she did it wherever she was.
Well, not only she did it wherever she was, but literally it was just her.
Yeah.
There was not a single other person in those shots.
Yeah. But she rocked it.
And yeah.
I mean, it was nice callback to the character. It was nice callback in terms of the... There was always that suspicion Kat had caught on.
Well... It was also a little surprising and nice they got her back after they had recast the role for the flashback scene. And it made sense to kind of do that and whatnot. But I was also curious because I didn't pay enough attention on the final scene that Cat Grant was in with Kara. Because they were on screen at the same time, but it's one of those interview, they're sitting far enough apart facing each other. They didn't have to be in the same room at the same time.
Yeah, that could easily have been green screened or
composited affected. or something.
Well, and really, as I understood it way back when, the only reason Calista Flockhart left the show was it moved to Vancouver from L.A.
I was going to say, she didn't leave it, it left her.
Yeah.
She had a life and whatnot in L.A. and wasn't going to uproot for it, and I get it.
Yeah.
But she had done other sort of cameos or whatever like that sort mm-hmm. of a thing to a lesser degree in past seasons, which I thought was nice. So they did a pretty good job as a final season.
I guess what disappointed me in the season was the totems.
Yeah.
That's... And I mean, each time they went through the gauntlets, I mean, like with the courage totem, I was asking you, do you understand the gauntlet? Because I'm not convinced I do.
The problem I had with the totems was a couple of fold. First, the term totems. It's already been used over in Legends of Tomorrow for the Zari character, which is kind of sort of their version of Isis. And they had, you know, the other totems that went with it and such. So it's like, okay, we had those elemental totems, now we're getting these, that's a little confusing, whatever. And then what they stood for of hope, courage, dream, I forget what the others were, because they put them on a board, but...
Destiny was one of them.
They felt similar-ish enough to the Paragons stuff.
That's what I was thinking.
In Crisis.
Yeah.
And it became a quest kind of a storyline of who's going to fulfill the collection first. And they cheat. I don't want to say cheated, but they changed the rules a couple of times. Oh, we'll destroy this one. Oh, it reconstitutes. Oh, well, never mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think it was a great plot line. And the whole gauntlet of how you get deemed worthy or whatnot. Honestly, I've seen done much better on one or two other shows.
For me, the gauntlets were where it fell down. Because, especially with the courage one. I mean, when Supergirl finally has kind of the revelation of, I think this is why I failed the courage gauntlet. Because I didn't have the courage to use my powers as myself. You know, you look back 6 years in the show's history,
mm-hmm.
and the world they're in is very not ready for aliens, is about to go through the whole, if you're aliens, we'll kill you. And she's considered not courageous because she wants to help people and save people's lives without endangering her own family.
Now, if I recall the pilot correctly, her sister's on a flight in danger, so, oh, Alex is going to die, Kara's got to do something. She does, she goes out, she flies, she catches the thing. She is even seen standing on, I forget if it was the plane or whatever, in not a particular costume.
Right, just by her sister, though. Nobody else looks out the window.
But I was going to say, no mask, no nothing. It's not like she was hiding who she was. She hadn't gone in disguise.
Right.
She hadn't done it remotely. She just didn't go public. She didn't go for the
Adulation,
exactly. So, and it was one of those things that I think even as we saw her continually failing that gauntlet, we're like, I think this is the solution. So the fact that it took them another 6 episodes to tell us?
Yeah.
Too little, too late.
Well, and for me, it was just, it didn't feel true to the world they were in.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And that was... Well,
but that was also a different world they were in. It was pre-Crisis.
Yeah. Okay.
And if you think about it, at that point, the world didn't know about aliens.
Yeah.
Didn't have metahumans.
Yeah.
Didn't have... I'm trying to think what else they didn't have. I mean, none of the powered people from the other shows were really around back then on this world.
But, I mean, just...
Well, Superman was a known quantity in that world, so they had superheroes at least.
But the Courage Gauntlet was using today's standards for that moment, I guess, is where it was breaking down for me.
She was theorizing that's why she failed. Yeah. We don't know.
True.
So there's that out for the writers. But I think the magic word they had to invoke the gauntlet of Cursix or whatever was a bad choice. It sounded too much like a curse.
See, I couldn't tell if it was meant to sound like that or Latin for cross, like my cross to bear, which didn't work for me either.
Yeah.
Crixus. It just
Crixus is maybe what it was.
It wasn't working for me.
Well, and then when they would constantly take these totems of fifth dimensional power, whatever they were, mount them on gauntlets and start firing beams out of them like they're weapons or something. Not like they were, but they were literally turned into weapons. That felt a little odd, too.
Weaponizing courage to steal courage from others. I mean, there were a lot of concepts this season that I struggled with.
Well, and I also struggled with Supergirl being cast as the villain, not even by the media, but by the public.
Yeah.
Whereas she's got a history in the show of being the stand-up hero who's out to protect everybody, yet the public turned on her multiple times.
There seemed to be a recurring theme in the back half of Supergirl having to step up and say, I made a mistake, I'm sorry, I'll do better. And I can understand someone wanting to write and wanting to set an example of, look, people in power need to own their mistakes.
Yeah.
But it wasn't playing right for me.
I didn't feel it was playing right for me either. There were a couple of times where how would the public even have known really what's going on, or that she had made a mistake, and there were a couple of times I didn't feel like necessarily she had made a mistake. The writers, I think, had made a few.
Yeah.
There was this satellite that was going to supercharge her by focusing solar rays by, like, somehow from Earth orbit drawing power out of the sun and maybe, you know, shifting its orbit, its size or something like that. I'm like...
And depowering the sun for 6 months?
Yeah. It's like this satellite was literally...
A vacuum?
Vacuuming, like a sucking a solar flare, pulling it out of the sun somehow. And I'm like, science doesn't work that way. Pseudoscience, I don't even think, works that way.
Well, and Jean had to go up and physically move the satellite when they took control of it.
He's flown up, he's physically moving it, and they're doing this over National City. Now, if he's off by even a hair of degree on the angle or whatever,
and this is
missed that tiny little girl-sized target, vaporized the building next to it.
And this is nowhere near where she wants to use the power once she's powered up.
Yeah, but there were a couple of times where nowhere near didn't matter because they had these magical portals everybody just kept hopping through.
I wanted to know when Luther's mom got a magical portal bracelet thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, but it was the time Supergirl flew to the quote-unquote cathedral or whatever that was just some ruins somewhere to get, I forget which totem, and then suddenly Alex is there, and we're like, how? Supergirl flew halfway around the planet! Okay. And then there's a purplish glow from off-screen as Alex leaves. It's like, oh, it's a portal.
So that might have been the moment when I commented, if that's all it takes to be a cathedral, we could put one of those in our backyard.
Just about. Jeez.
And don't get me wrong, I loved the ruins. But when they said it was a cathedral, I was expecting a cathedral.
I was expecting at least like a museum or something like that where these other ones had been. So yeah,
I was thinking four walls, a roof. A door.
I'd have settled for a wall. I mean, this was ruins. There were some things where I think they could have and should have done better this season. It was still a good season.
Mm.
But I don't think it's the high watermark that, say, other seasons have been for this or over on Flash or Arrow. I think Arrow really had a pretty solid end season.
Mm-hmm.
But it was leading into Crisis, that was kind of this universe's endgame moment, if you will. And I think they were trying to do a few too many things this season. It was a little too scattered in direction, and some of the changes they were making to the characters felt too late in the game. And, I mean, Dreamer's arc was okay and not poorly placed or whatever, but okay, were we ever going to see the character again? The complete change in direction for Lena was interesting, but if they'd had another season to go and she's actually gonna become a magic powered hero or something, it would have made more sense versus, okay, she's just now a magic user, I guess. It felt accelerated and almost pointless, even though it was entertaining.
To me, it was only in service of the Nixie stuff. If Nixie hadn't been here, Lena wouldn't have had any of that.
They needed magic to fight magic. Mm-hmm. The thing is, they could have used Dreamer for some of that, and they did. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right. It was motivated by that. If it had been a technological-based threat, Lena would have stayed science.
Yeah.
So they did some interesting stuff. It did annoy me the few times we'd go to the fortress that it was a different fortress than we're seeing over in Superman and Lois. So obviously Superman is keeping... He has a decoy fortress either for his family or for Supergirl. I haven't figured out which.
When, for me, the back half of the season was about empowerment. Taking your power, empowering yourself was a big theme.
Yes.
And then coming to the understanding that it's not simply about empowering yourself, it's about working with others, being an empowered team.
I almost want to say it's not that that was the theme, but that that was the mantra.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
Because they kept beating the drum on that fairly explicitly in dialogue and such like that.
And that goes to the heavy-handedness and the preachiness that I was saying. It just felt so... I wish they had been more graceful and more subtle.
Yeah, I was going to say subtle was the word coming, but graceful is a good one too. It was very unsubtle, and I think writers from past seasons, and I don't know if they were the same writers or not. I didn't really pay attention to if the writer room changed. I think they would have been a bit more graceful in the execution of this.
You know, I mean, in the past seasons when they were doing alien immigration as a parallel to what was going on at the borders,
yeah,
for the U.S. and stuff, they were drawing very clear parallels, and yet they were trying to be a bit removed.
Well, they didn't feel the need to beat us over the head with, see what we're doing here? See? See?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. And there were other times where in past seasons, the big speech she gives or whatever seemed a little more heartfelt and such versus... This was almost, I don't want to say self-deprecating, but she's like, hey, I was too stupid to see this. I'm not here to save you. I'm here to tell you to save yourselves, kind of.
Well, there was an aspect of you don't need me to the speech.
Yeah.
Kind of a, that's why the show's over. And then when the show actually reaches its end, which, I mean, there were kind of a couple false ends, if you will.
It was surprising to me how early in the last episode we defeated the villains.
Mm-hmm.
And I should have checked how much time we had left in the episode for the epilogue-ish type stuff.
Yeah. You know, but when we get to the ultimate end of the episode, we've made a major status quo change.
Yes.
That could conceivably affect other shows in the universe. And the
absolutely
question is, will it? Will this have any consequences, or will it be kind of blown off?
Well, it's funny because it's a plot point that comes from the Superman comics, not the Supergirl comics.
Mm.
But even though they've got a Superman in this world, in many respects, Supergirl is filling the role of Superman. Because when other heroes needed help, they went to her, not him.
Yeah.
And there were times where he seemed to almost abdicate his role as Superman to go have a kid. Okay, that didn't happen because of the crisis stuff now. So I'm really curious moving forward on Superman and Lois, how much of stuff from Supergirl they acknowledge
mm-hmm.
and they bring back. I know they're bringing the actress who played Lucy Lane, which would be interesting. They didn't have to because they recast Major Lane. So, you know, don't know. I'm curious if they're going to leverage parts of this continuity over there or not. I'll be honest, though. I was surprised a couple of the things they brought back in the final episodes that I didn't expect to see again, specifically Red Tornado.
Mm. Well, there was an aspect to me of it's just kind of a, let's use all the effects we've created in the past.
Yeah, what CG characters can we pull back without having to go cast somebody? They don't have to have any lines of dialogue, so we can all fight over, you know, on the CG stuff. There's an aspect of both the DC shows and movies where their action sequences feel very video gamey
mm-hmm.
compared to what we tend to get on the Marvel stuff, both on the movies and TV. Because I think they do a much better job, particularly on the recent Disney Plus shows. Falcon and Winter Soldier is a great example. Man, the action sequences there are fluid.
Yeah.
here, and I get they're on a network TV, cadence, budget, etc. When they're flying around and stuff, it's, I know it's being done by computer.
Yeah.
But frankly, so some of the Falcon Winter Soldier and other Disney stuff. So, but they're doing it on a motion picture budget versus TV budget. It just feels very video game-ish. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that in a pejorative, it sucks kind of way, but it's a noticeable thing, even though it tells the story effectively. But again, enjoyable show. Could have and honestly should have been better in places.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it was, again, the heavy-handed writing. I'm both sorry and not sorry to see it go.
I miss the early, light, bright, happy tone from, like, season one.
Even two or three, when we had Mon-El and a few others, mm-hmm. they had a sense of humor about it that was a little bit lighter. They weren't as angst-ridden. And melodramatic.
Yeah.
I think the show started to lose its way a little bit. Not majorly, and not fatally or catastrophically.
I mean, it's one of the few shows where they do a family game night, and it makes sense, and it plays for the characters, and it gives the characters that chosen family vibe in a very real sense.
One of the things I think they missed an opportunity on was at the wedding scene at the end. For them to have had a shot of, okay, here's all the wedding gifts, have a whoosh of wind, and have one from Central City just pop up.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have done a makeshift acknowledgement of the Flash without having the Flash.
Yeah.
Which would have been a shame. It would have been nice for them to do. But yeah, this is what, the third Arrowverse show to end after Arrow and Black Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely leaves Flash is kind of the potential anchor show with it. I would expect that to transition potentially over to Superman and Lois just because it's Superman.
Yeah.
But I'm curious how much longer they're going to keep Legends of Tomorrow going. And Batwoman, I think, has got another few seasons in it. And then I think they've got Naomi coming up, which will probably spin out of Superman and Lois. But I'm curious, what's the Arrowverse going to look like? Now that, you know, things are significantly changing. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, she was one of the mainstays in the crossovers for quite some time.
Yeah.
So, enjoyed it, but like I said, thought it could have and should have been a little better.
Yeah, that's about where I am.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.